makers of R.G. Dunn cigars present...
No, no, don't do it. You're wrong.
Ah, it's the most peculiar thing I've heard.
Lace collar, velvet briefs, little Lord Fauntleroy.
War, war, the whole world preparing for wholesale murder.
Here he comes now. Three more steps and then let him have it.
Comes to life.
The makers of R.G. Dunn cigars do not make any boasts as to the things an R.G. Dunn cigar will help you to do. Nor do they say that an R.G. Dunn cigar after donuts and coffee will make that lunch a banquet. But they do say that an R.G. Dunn is a swell smoke. Thousands of discriminating smokers say that it is the all-imported filler, the mild, smooth-burning tobaccos, and the perfect workmanship and factory freshness of each cigar that make R.G. Dunn's outstanding. They are all of the same high quality, but come in different sizes to suit your taste and pocketbook. Remember, there is no substitute for the best.
Badlands of Oklahoma, a plot is laid to rob the Coffeyville, Kansas banks. A plot laid by the most daring and most feared band of outlaws of the West. An outlaw band led by Bob Dalton and composed of Bob, his brothers Emmett and Gratz, Dick Broadwell and Bill Powers. They were going to rob two banks simultaneously. Accordingly, one bright October morning in the year 1892, five men came riding into Coffeyville, Kansas.
Bob, we're attracting attention.
It's the horses that's drawing their attention. Now, listen to me, you men. You know what to do.
Yeah.
As we go past the First National, me and Emmett will pull up to the hitch and rail and go in. You three keep right on the Condon bank. Me and Emmett will wait a few moments till you fellas get down there, and then we'll go inside. We'll be robbing both banks at the same time. We'll all make our getaway together. Get me?
Yeah.
All right. Here's where we leave you. Good luck, man.
Good luck, Bob. We'll be out of here in less than 10 minutes.
Get up.
Come on. Whoa. You ready, Emmett?
Yeah.
All right. Come on. As soon as we get inside the door, put your shooting iron. If you need to let it talk, do it quick.
Right.
Here we are.
There ain't no one in there but the cashier.
Howdy, Jim.
Just hold your mouth.
What? Guns.
That's right. Don't make us use them. Just hand over your cash.
Boy, it can't be done.
You weasened up little runt. I'll fill you full of lead if you don't hurry up with the cash.
It can't be done, I tell you. This here box has a time lock on it. Ain't no man alive can get that time lock to work before 9 o'clock.
You're lying.
No. It's straight goods, boy.
Plug in, Bob, and let's see ourselves.
Boys, you can perfate me if you want to, but it won't get you nowhere. Just take it easier for a few minutes, and it'll be all okay.
You reckon he's lying, Bob?
What time did you say that time lock at work?
9 o'clock. That's just 4 minutes.
Well, let's wait, Bob.
Sure, we'll wait. Keep the drop on a minute. I'll look around in the meantime. Maybe there's some loose change around.
Hey, Bob, listen.
What?
Outside, there seems to be some ruckus. They're shots.
Sounds like a regular battle, don't it?
Yeah. That's from the Condon Bank, I'll bet it is.
Come on, you go see. Hey, you, stick your head out of this bank and we'll pop it off. Come on, Emily.
Hey, look, Bob.
A big battle. We got the boys surrounded. Come on.
Well, someone must have put them wide.
Save your wind and get behind, talking. Hold him, boys. We're coming to help you.
Now hold on. Pounce on out against the Bob, I reckon.
Bob. But they got grass.
Never mind about that. Watch yourself. Get some of those stumps off.
We got enough lead in them to sink them.
Boy, it's the Dalton Band.
Huh?
Yeah, that's right. We wiped out the whole darn Dalton Band of robbers.
Yeah, I think so. That's the Dalton Band.
Here's still alive, Sheriff. Pretty well shot up.
The red one?
Yeah, just a kid.
Yeah. Yeah, he's kid, all right. What's your name, youngster?
Emmett. Dalton.
Yeah, I don't know it. It's the Dalton gang, all right.
On that October morning in 1892, the Dalton gang was literally shot to ribbons. Only one survived, Emmett, who was taken to the hospital with 23 wounds in his body. He was sentenced to life imprisonment. 1 year passed, then two, then five, 10, 14 years. Then one day in 1907.
Oh! Emmett Dalton?
Yes?
Step out. The warden wants to see you.
Right.
Come in, Dalton.
Yes, sir.
Dalton, I've got good news for you.
You have?
Yeah. You've been a model prisoner here, and the governor has seen fit to grant you a pardon.
A pardon? A pardon after 14 and a half years?
Yes, Dalton. Governor thinks that from now on you'll go straight.
You can tell the governor he's right, Warden. If I get out, I've got something I'm going to spend a lot of time doing.
What's that, Dalton?
Well, I'm not saying much about it right now, Warden, but I can guarantee it straight.
All right. We can go to the office and get you released. Oh. And good luck.
Oh, a pardon? After 14 and a half years? I wonder what it'll feel like to have a horse under me again. And to smell the sagebrush and the open spaces. No walls, no bars. Oh, God. After 14 and a half years.
But Emmett Dalton didn't have much time to wander over the great open spaces. He kept his promise to the warden, crusaded for prison reform, went into the work wholeheartedly, created notice, and accomplished much. And then, 1937.
Yes, Doctor. I know I'm going. No use fooling me, Doc.
Well, I'm afraid you're right, Dalton.
I knew it. I ain't afraid, but, Doc.
Yes?
There's one favor I'd like to ask.
What is that?
I'm taking my last ride. And when I come to the hitching post, let me rest beside Bob and Scratch out there at Coffeyville, Kansas.
I'll see that you do.
Thanks, Doc. I hope Bob and Gratz have got me a nice bronc to ride when I meet up with them.
A few days ago, Emmett Dalton, the last of the notorious Dalton Band of outlaws, took his last ride. Having atoned in a great measure for the sins of his younger days, his last wish was fulfilled. His remains rest beside his brother Graff and his brother Bob, whom he worshipped throughout his life. Thus is another chapter of the colorful West of yesteryear ended. ¶¶ on a highway near Miami, Florida. A car racing along at top speed. The driver, a young woman. Spotted by a motorcycle officer who immediately began to give chase.
All right. When I yell stop, I mean stop.
Oh, officer, please let me explain. Please, I...
You just never mind. I'll do the talking.
It's terribly important, officer, that I get into town without a single minute wasted.
I suppose you're going to tell me it's a life and death matter.
Well, yes, really, officer, it is.
Yeah, I know all about that. Where's your operator's license?
If only you'll let me go, please. It's going to be too late.
I said, where's your operator's license?
I haven't got it.
No, you haven't, huh?
No. Oh, officer, please let me explain. I'm...
All right, what's your name?
Virginia Graham. And I...
I'll do the talking. Where are you from?
Miami County Hospital.
County Hospital, eh? Well, what are you doing, trying to make a getaway?
No, no, I'm trying to get into town to... Oh, officer, now it'll be too late, I know it.
Too late for what?
I was speeding into town to get a blood donor. A
blood donor? Well, what for?
For a little boy at the hospital who needs a transfusion to live. And now it's too late, I'm afraid.
Well, gee whiz, why didn't you say so?
I tried to, but you wouldn't...
Park your car and jump on my motorcycle.
What?
I'll go back to the hospital with you. I'll give my blood. That's what I'll do.
It might not be the right type, officer.
Well, it's got to be the right type. I stopped you, and I've got to save that kid's life. Now, come on. Here we go.
Officer Thompson's blood is the right type, doctor.
All right. You'll administer the transfusion at once.
Yes, doctor.
Today, the two-year-old child in the Miami County Hospital is recovering. And Officer Thompson declares that fate stepped in and gave him an opportunity to make up for his hasty action, which might have resulted in a tragic mistake.
You and Mr. Williams and Mr. Schultz are waiting to see you about their contract.
Get on the way. Quick phone. Hello. No, Jane, I didn't call you. I've got to take the other phone. Quick phone.
Mr. Wesley, I've got to fix that water pipe.
New Orleans is calling on line 3. The other call is from Springfield. Mr. Williams says you can't wait. He's got to leave town in an hour.
Stop that confounded hammering.
I can't work without making some noise, Mr. Wesley.
Here's your problem, Mr. Wesley.
Which one? I'm going crazy.
I'm sending the office boy in to see you, sir.
Office boy? Who wants to see the office boy? 4 phones ringing. And that fool of a janitor. Stop that pounding.
Mr. Wesley, Gertie said to give you these.
What's in that cigar box? Do you have to barge in here, too?
She said stop a minute and light one.
All right, I will light one. But let me tell you, after that, I'm going to fire the whole bunch of you.
Gert says that that's the time she keeps out there to quiet down the customers when they get mad.
Hey, this is something.
I'll say it's an R.G. Dunn.
What? A good old R.G. Dunn. Say, I can talk to all those fellas at once. Tell Gert to connect me with New Orleans. I'll send Williams in right away. And, oh, yes. Remind me to raise your salary.
Yes, sir. Anything else?
Go out and get me another box of R.G. Dunn.
Nerves relax. Tension flattens. The fragrance and mellowness of a fine cigar saves many a man in a tough spot. Such a cigar is the R.G. Dunn, the choice of discriminating men in all walks of life who choose that smoke because of its quality. Quality due to properly aged, smooth-burning, mellow tobacco and fine workmanship. Try just one, and you'll join with thousands in saying there's no smoke so good as an R.G. Dunn cigar.
Death comes to little Lord Fauntleroy. Friends of Vivian Burnett, 61-year-old newspaper man, today prepared a hero's burial for the man who in childhood was the model for his mother's book, and who throughout his life tried to persuade the world that he was nothing like the picture so vividly portrayed in Francis Burnett's classic. Back in 1883, little Lord Fauntleroy became a popular seller, and the stiff white collar worn by the boy in the story was soon the national vogue. Mrs. Burnett wisely refrained from telling Vivian that he was the boy after whom she had patterned Fauntleroy. But a few years later, her son was a sophomore at Harvard. One day, he strolled into a campus bookshop, and then came the blow.
If I were you, young man, I'd go on back to my room. Those young whippersnappers in the back, they're getting pretty tough. They're laughing about that article.
What article do you mean?
Haven't you read it? It's an article by your mother. There, in that magazine, huh? Near the bottom of this page.
Now, let me see that. And when my little boy came to me and asked me to write a boy's book, inspiration came to me. Using him as a model for its leading character, I wrote Little Lord Fauntleroy. Oh, but Mr. Benson, surely Mother couldn't have meant that I was a... Well, it can't be. I'm nothing like that fellow.
Here they come, but I warned you.
Hey, fellas, our hero.
He's here for our hero. Hit him.
Hooray!
Hooray! Hey, cut it out. Cut it out, son.
Oh, he doesn't like it. Little Lord Fauntleroy doesn't like it. Where's your lace cow?
Ah. Haven't you curls, Vivian?
Vivian. Now I know why his name's the same as a girl.
Vivian Fox.
And young Burnett did prove it, making a name for himself on the track squad. But the name of Fauntleroy continued to follow him. After graduation, he obtained work on a newspaper staff, and one day in the office of his paper,
there's a big fire on Chestnut Street. Who's available to cover it?
I'm not busy, Chief. How about letting me take the assignment?
All right, Burnett. Have you finished that yarn about the old salt who was killed?
Yes, sir. All done and turned in.
Then go on. You won't have any trouble finding the fire. It's on Chestnut, up the hill.
You're not sending little Vivian out on a horrid fire, are you?
What's come over you, Red?
Haven't you heard? It's a wonder he kept it a secret around here for a whole month. That, Chief, that young fellow standing there is the one and only Little Lord Fauntleroy. The original, right there before your eyes.
No.
Yeah, his mother wrote the book, and she admitted that Vivian was the model. I just happened to run across a magazine article the other day.
Is that true, Burnett?
I'm afraid it is, Chief. But you certainly don't hold that against me.
Well, no, we'll give you a chance. But not on this assignment.
Of course not. He might get his feet wet.
You take it, Red. Okay. We'll find Burnett something to do inside him. Maybe put him on the exchange desk.
Exchange desk? No, Chief, don't do that. I might as well be buried alive.
Sorry, Burnett. Report to Mr. Cooper.
No, I won't do it. I'm resigning, effective today. I'll prove that I can handle tough ones.
How do you think you'll do that?
I'll go out to Denver. Get on one of the papers out there.
Denver? Burnett, you don't know what you're doing. Right now, Denver's just about as safe as the wilds of Africa. The boys on the papers out there, well, they have to pack two guns.
I know it. And that's where I'm heading. I might drop in and send you a line from out there.
My gosh, the boy means it.
Mean it he did. And soon Vivian Burnett was one of the toughest fist-flinging news hunters in Denver. At that time, a place where news had to be fought for, where reporters got their stories by stealth, trickery, or at the point of a gun. Burnett later became widely known as a columnist on Eastern papers, writer for magazines, and composer of music. In recent years, the identity of the original Little Lord Fauntleroy has almost been forgotten. But last Sunday, during a squall on Long Island Sound...
What a blow we're having, Mr. Burnett. Don't you think we'd better tack about?
Wait. That boat over there having trouble?
Looks to me like they're liable to spill.
They are. They're tipping over. Head the boat that way. Johnny, get ready to lower our small boat.
Those bars are hanging onto the hull. Maybe they can hold out till we make it.
We'll make it. We'll do it if it's the last thing I ever do. Go on now. Row for all your worth. We're only a few feet away from you. I wish I dared leave our boat. I'd like to lend a hand there. Don't let go of that wheel. They've got him. Pull them up. Make me four blankets, Molo. We'll wrap those poor devils up and keep them warm till we can dock.
We've got them, but how are we going to get them aboard? The wind's too strong.
Here, grab this rope. I'll haul you in.
I got it, but you can't pull us.
I can, eh? You just help along with the oars. I'll have you alongside in a minute.
Good work. We'll make it.
Are those folks all right?
Well, they'll be okay. We'll have to get back to the dock first, though.
I'll make this line fast. Then throw me another.
Here she goes.
soon as there's one side tight, I'll help you pull him up on deck. Ah. All right down there? Try to boost him up.
Stop your waves. It's hard. Lucky we don't spill.
You know, I've got this one. Done it. Wrap a blanket around this girl and see that she's all right.
Okay, boss. The two men, they can climb up alone. Give me a hand with the other woman.
Here we are now. Careful now. She'll be all right there.
Well, great work, Mr. Bennett. We'll all climb up now.
Well, and then we'll head for shore. Tough work, but we did it.
You mean you did it, Mr. Bennett. You showed us young fellas a few things. I'll tell Bud up there to head back for Doc now. Isn't that right? I say, Mr. Bennett, isn't that... Hey, come here, fellas. Something's wrong with Mr. Bennett. Sure, I hear he's fainted. Here, lend a hand here. Come on here.
It was too much for him. We shouldn't have let him take charge like that. Come on, help me carry him over to that chair.
You got it, come on. Take it easy.
But death came to Vivian Burnett in his 61st year. But it was a hero's death, and a far cry from those early days when he had trouble convincing the public that he was not like the little Lord Fauntleroy of his mother's book. The strain of rescuing four strangers was too much for his stout old heart. And today his widow and two daughters mourn for one who, even to his last day, continued to prove that he was a man of strength and courage. Jailbreak loom in the news. Prisoners over the weekend successfully released themselves from institutions in two states. Rossview State Penitentiary, near Belfonte, Pennsylvania, has a modern prison farm. Convicts harvest fruit and work in the institution's cannery, a building surrounded with high barbed wire fences. On Saturday, just as prisoners working in the cannery had filed out of the building...
You think they'll notice you ain't with him, Steve?
No, they won't notice. Not till they check us in. Didn't I plan all this? I tell you, they ain't got a chance of them noticing.
Where's Frank? Say, he ought to be here. You don't suppose he's going to squeal?
Hey, that guy knows better than to squeal, pal. He'll be with us all right.
What gets me is how are we going to get over that barbed wire?
Well, we got to climb it, that's all.
Oh, but get all cut up, and somebody's sure to see us. I hate to get shot up just when I was climbing it.
We'll pipe down. Somebody's coming.
I stuck around the corner of the building.
Nice, it's Frank.
I thought he wasn't coming. Frank, where you been?
Look, he's got a pair of wire cutters. It's here, our pal. Come on, Frank. Let's get over to the fence and start cutting.
Come on, brother. I'm starting to think you changed your mind, Frank.
Yeah, well, Frank, he's okay, I tell you. I always did say so. Here's a good spot.
Yeah, give me them cutters.
I'll handle them cutters. It takes good muscles in your fingers to work this thing fast.
Hey, that sure cuts it fast.
We'll have a hole big enough to get through here. Just a couple of more wires. There.
You can head for the garage?
Yeah. Go on. You get through, you guys. I'll go last. Yeah. The first garage that's got a car in it. Yeah, I seen it.
I'm through. Come on, Frank. Right in the garage.
Right. Hey, there's a guard's car. Frank, jump in it, Ray.
Yeah, that's a fast buggy.
Oh, they seen us. Come on, get going, fellas.
Which way, Steve?
Take the Pittsburgh road. I step on it. I can see them getting the car out.
They can't go no faster than us. You'll get away.
I hope they don't hit the tires.
Yeah, you got it back.
See that side road up ahead? I turned down it. Maybe they won't notice. I wish we had some gas.
Hey, there's a gun here in the pocket. Take it.
One of the guards. Well, here goes.
What luck?
Nah, too far back. I can't hit him. I keep going, Ray.
Right.
Pull up by that car ahead and we'll grab it and leave this prison buggy. All right, get out of that car, brother. Get out, I said.
You mean you're stealing my car?
So what?
Get out and do it quick. We're getting in there.
That's a prison car. You fellows are convicts.
Yeah. Come on, Ray. Jump in there and drive.
Yeah, but you can't do that. That's the only car I ever had. I need it.
Working your way through college, I suppose, eh?
Sure, that's right. I'm going back to Penn State in the fall.
Don't that, Steve?
All right. Take the prison car. That'll be something new for your college guy.
And on went the fugitives. Ray Hill, Steve Mastermack, and Frank Burke. All sentenced on robbery charges. While radio calls went out to Pennsylvania state officers to be on the lookout for the collegiate car stolen by the convicts in their headlong flight. Meanwhile, the weekend brought further news from the crime frontier. News to dishearten the most brazen of gunmen. The scene, Chicago, where police officers have learned not to use silk gloves in dealing with gangsters. A few weeks ago, Detective Ward was assigned to the hunt for a moron operating on the southwest side who had slain one and robbed numerous others. The thug had operated often in a lonely section near Keeler Avenue and 58th Street. And there, on a dark night, sat the officer with a companion, waiting in their parked car for whatever might happen.
There's a guy now, sneaking along behind the car, Sam.
You all set, Bill?
Yeah. Let him come if he tries anything. Well, we're ordered not to take any chances.
Stick him up, you guys.
What's the idea?
I said stick him up. Oh, you got him.
Just in time. See that gun?
He was ready to use it, too.
My gosh, Dan. You know who this is? It's Louis Ebert. This is the man that's wanted for a half a dozen crimes out of here. Come on. Drag him inside and let's go.
Quick work on the part of Officer Ward, for which he gained not only the acclaim of brother officers, but a $100 reward paid by a Chicago newspaper for the month's most heroic feat. But Detective Ward was not destined to remain long out of the headlines. Last Saturday night, getting off a Halstead street car, he started to walk around his home. It was late, and the street was dark as the officer walked briskly down the sidewalk.
All right, you. Reach for the sky.
What's this, a stick-up?
I'll say reach for the sky, Ted. Hey, I gotta be stubborn, eh? Huh? How's this? Yeah. All right, get them hands up. Quit reaching for your pocket or I'll... I'll teach you, you rat.
If it's going to be teaching, try this. And that's the lesson, young man. Next time, if you live to think it over, try something a little more honest than stick-ups.
And once more, Detective Bill Ward proved to what stuff he was made. The thug who turned out to be Leo Smith, alias Gutswiller, was removed to Englewood Hospital. But Ward's aim had been too good, and today another Chicago gangster is dead. The man with whom Detective Ward shares honors for the week is Lige Dabowski, restaurant chef who was shopping in a store last week when two bandits walked in. Dabowski, after a struggle, got possession of one of the robbers' guns and shot both. Seriously wounded himself, he was rushed to county hospital and given all possible care. Citizens and officers contributed nearly $1,000 to his aid. And today, Dr. Ole Nelson announced that Dabowski is on the road to recovery. Meanwhile, the two hold-up men have joined the one who tried conclusions with Detective Ward. All three lie on slabs in the morgue. New evidence of Chicago's determination to prove that crime does not pay.
News comes to life.
Remember, Mr. Smoker, that the makers of R.G. Dunn cigars make no claim that their product will make you a champion in any kind of athletics or games of skill. But they do say that an R.G. Dunn is a fine smoke. The testimony of thousands of discriminating men points to the all-imported long filler, the mild, smooth-burning tobaccos. Perfect workmanship and factory-fresh smoking condition have the outstanding features of an R.G. Dunn cigar. If you want to smoke for keen pleasure and real satisfaction, Light up an RG Don in perfect humidor condition and enjoy a darn fine smoke. They're all of the same high quality, but come in different sizes to suit your taste and pocketbook. 15 cents, 2 for 25 cents. 10 cents, 2 for 15 cents from the RG Don Babies and Junior Panatellas at only 5 cents. Remember, there is no substitute for the best.
Every Tuesday at 10:15 p.m. and every Saturday at 9:45 p.m., the makers of RG Don Cigars present a dramatized version of the news of today and yesterday. Sports, oddities, comedy, and pathos from all over the world in
News Comes to Life.
Your announcer, Harry Bird. This is WJR, the Goodwill Station, Detroit.